In 1995, Newsweek magazine carried the article, "The Internet? Bah," in which the author declared e-commerce as, and I quote, baloney. And in 1997, History of the Future predicted humans would have arrived on Mars by 2020. In 1957, Popular Mechanics predicted cars would be traveling by pneumatic tubes by 2020. With the Hyperloop testing of a pneumatic train in progress, some of the predictions have proven more accurate than others. At the start of every year, a host of predictions emerge of what will define the year ahead. There are predictions for all kinds of industries, from the world of media to technology to tourism, and they range from the wild and exciting to the more grounded in reality. One prediction I saw for 2021 is for flying Ubers. Potentially setting ourselves up to get things equally wrong, in this episode, it's our turn.
You're listening to the Future of Finance podcast by UK Finance, a series exploring the latest trends in financial services, how they're changing, and how firms can equip themselves to face the challenges of tomorrow.
Hello, and welcome to UK Finance's podcast series. In this episode, I'm happy to be joined by Theo from Fintech OS to discuss some of his predictions for the upcoming year, thinking about what will define technology transformation in financial services in 2021. Before you introduce us to your list, Theo, could you introduce yourself and Fintech OS?
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much for having me here. I'm Theo. I'm a co-founder and CEO of Fintech OS. Been working for the last 25 years in technology for financial services, and I just believe it's a great period to be part of, to be honest. Fintech OS is a financial technology infrastructure provider, helping banks and insurers accelerate digital transformation, and also offer personalized and differentiated products and services in order, obviously, to improve the end-to-end customer experience. We started 3.5 years ago, and we've, you know, had an interesting route until now. But I guess, you know, the future is open for a lot of players in this space. So I'm very excited about 2021.
Well, it's fantastic to have you join us on this podcast episode to share your predictions for 2021. So, Theo, could you give me a sense of what are your top three predictions in terms of trends for how technology will transform financial services in 2021?
Sure. So if I would take my picks, I would say data-driven personalization of service. That would be, I guess, my top. Customer experience from the point that, you know, it's no longer a buzzword, it's a reality, and, you know, we need to look at customer experience as an end-to-end. And thirdly, I would say the speed of transformation, the speed that is required in order to get somewhere, to produce meaningful results. So I would say that digital transformation reaches a crossroad where we must learn to reap the benefits faster than we were expected to.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. So I think one of the things that I'd love to do over the course of this episode, over the next 25 minutes or so, is to dig into each of those three and then get your reaction to some of the things that I'm thinking about as being key trends for 2021 as well. And that includes kind of no code or low code development, banking as a service, and then, you know, something very on the horizon, very much for the future, is central bank digital currency. So, Theo, you mentioned kind of the next era of personalization, particularly built around data. Some people who listen to this might be familiar with DevOps or agile development methodology, which, you know, really teach the benefit of getting feedback loops around services, how they're performing, and how that drives development. What does data-driven personalization mean to you?
Okay, so here's my thinking here. We've seen a lot of conversations about, you know, offering a personalized service and how personalization can effectively increase the customer experience. But I think, you know, the whole concept, it's still quite loose, to some extent a little bit overhyped. And that's basically because a lot of companies are just dressing up customization as personalization, right? So you have, you know, various ways to customize a payment plan, you know, a savings pot, and you know, steel plated cards, and so on. But that's not real personalization, right? I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not bad, but it's not enough. So my view on personalization is typically bound to data and how you can effectively integrate data from various different sources in order to create more bespoke, hence personalized products and services. So let me give you a clear example. SME banking, right? I mean, we could always go to retail, but let's just leave retail for a while because everybody is talking about that. So if you talk about SME banking, right? And you would compare, for example, a technology startup, a consulting startup, and an e-commerce startup. And that's obviously, you know, from the bank's perspective, the traditional segmentation perspective, you would say, well, it's 1 million or, you know, 0 to 1 million turnover, around 22 people in the company, and so on and so forth. So therefore, you would have the idea that you would present this segment with various lending services and trade finance and so on. While in reality, if you start looking at how the business models are, you easily understand that how these type of companies are using financial services in their current life cycle is totally different, right? So arguably, if you're an e-commerce or you're a logistics startup, you are cash flow is very important. You need a lot of cash to start your business. If you're a consulting company, I would say that it's different because obviously you can scale and grow and have a positive cash flow from day one. If you're a technology startup, we'll understand, you know, that until you hit the market with a product, you need an upfront investment to build that product and so on and so forth. So I guess what happens is, for example, as you start getting in more and more information that it's tailored to each business model, you have the unique opportunity to produce customer journeys, products, services that are specifically tailored to each of these customer profiles. And therefore, you know, you have a unique possibility to personalize the service that you are offering to, you know, the technology company, to the logistic company, to the consulting company. You have the unique possibility to differentiate yourself from the other banks in the market who are just offering generically SME loans. That would be an example, right? That would be the idea of, you know, data-driven personalization, having the unique possibility to capture in and feed in bespoke data that is specifically tailored to one customer segment or one customer profile. Use that data into building the logic of your products and services. And last but not least, to the overall customer journey. So how will your customer, you know, onboard with a certain service? How will he or she self-service, right? The overall journey is also important. And if you add into the mix stuff like open banking, you know, who gives you a real opportunity, for example, to plug in external information that are not necessarily yours, you're starting to see how, data can really fuel a new era of personalization and differentiation in the market. And, you know, does that make sense?
It does. Thank you. I suppose, are there particular reasons for why 2021 will be a game changer in this regard? Are there things moving in the ecosystem which particularly set firms up to take advantage of data and personalization in the next year?
I think we're just scratching the surface currently with, the open banking topics. You see a lot of information or insights that have been gained from, customer accounts and stuff like that. But I think, you know, I'm more aware of the fact that we need to move into an era of open finance, right? Where, making use of technologies such as, banking as a service platforms and stuff like that will effectively allow, you know, this market where everybody will find more and more personalized services that are effectively backed up, even if they are backed up by a common infrastructure.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be a fascinating coming together where you have traditional firms continuing to embrace how digital can enrich the customer experience and how it transforms their business model, mm-hmm. with digital first banks, with the continued transformation of open banking, but also, you know, kind of consideration of what that means for an open data economy, right? Thinking beyond just financial services. And I think there are some really interesting international examples of how consumers and customers are being empowered to move their data in a permissioned way across different industry verticals. And then, of course, you know, the speed with which payments and data can move across the economy makes all of this a really interesting moment for data-led personalization.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would, you know, kind of in conscious of time, we'll wrap up this topic by saying that I think banks are, you know, they must realize that they are in a unique position to act as what I would call data custodians, right? I know that traditionally people, are claiming that there's a lack of trust in banking. And granted, there's a lot of improvement that can be done in customer experience. But in reality, if you would compare, who would you trust more with your data? It's either a bank or a startup or a government. I think you understand where I'm going to. I don't think, you know, banks are in a bad place in this space.
Yeah, I think there's certainly very interesting research out there as to the role that banks play as a trusted set of institutions around securing people's data. I think, you know, I'd just like to move on to the next topic, Gio, because it's really linked to this first point that you've made, but takes it in an interesting direction, and that's around customer experience will no longer be a buzzword. I think I read a very interesting book recently, and that was written by Anne Boden. It's her new book, Banking on It, How I Disrupted an Industry. And there's a very interesting passage early on in that book, which talks about her perspective about the difference between putting a digital service online versus building an end-to-end customer-centric digital service, and how she approached this. It's very much her story of this period. And you know, I found it a very interesting read, and I read it through in about 4 or 5 hours, which I very rarely do with books beginning to end. I'd really like to get your perspective. You mentioned earlier that customer experience will no longer be a buzzword. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think, to be fair, I think it's not a buzzword today, right? So let's not be hypercritical here. But in reality, I think the idea of an end-to-end customer experience is becoming prevalent, right? Because I think we are coming from a place where for the past few years, everybody, you know, was talking about mobile first and online stuff, omni-channel, you know, the tip of the iceberg, right? But if you look at where, you know, how successful the banking sector has been in getting an ROI for their investment in digital transformation, you would see, you know, a staggering, you know, less than 30% of those initiatives really produce what they were supposed to. And I think the biggest problem that IDC, for example, identified there was their inability to think of the end-to-end customer experience, thinking in terms of end-to-end customer journeys, rather than discrete processes or discrete stages in certain processes. To give you an example, right? So people, for example, banks are overly concerned about how, you know, the user experience for an onboarding looks, right? And granted, you know, we've come across a long way. You know, it's there's a lot of good examples there. You know, Monzo, Revolut, I think they're doing it good. But essentially, we must understand that the customer experience doesn't end there, right? It's also about how tailored the product and or how tailored those services, how bespoke, how in tune are those services that are there to be offered, right? And in this respect, making sure that the processes in the background, in the middleware, in the back office of a bank are not broken, making sure that there's enough, let's say, personalization capability in order to really serve the customer for with what they are looking for, not, you know, with what we've got. I think it plays a key role. So in this respect, I would say that 2021 is going to be the year when people understand that customer experience, it's a full stack topic, right? It's not a user interface. It's not an onboarding topic. It's pretty much how you serve that customer from the first step to the last step, how those processes and stages in the customer journeys are being interlocked, how compelling service offering and how personalized the service offering is, and so on and so forth. So that's what I mean by not being a buzzword anymore, right? It needs to go deeper than that tip of the iceberg.
Absolutely. And I think it's particularly interesting as we look at how firms are looking at different business models, the unbundling of services, and then the rebundling of services, and how firms can use API-driven platform approach to, you know, form partnerships with different third parties to continue to serve customers. And I guess part of the interesting discussion around all of this is around what does the customer experience look like in that quite multifaceted landscape?
Yeah, and we're probably getting back to the same topics, being data driven, having the ability to integrate data, using, you know, banking as a service. Ecosystem plays a crucial role, right? So you're looking at, for example, what Revolut has to offer in terms of services. And if you unbundle those services, you will understand that quite a significant number of products and services that are aggregated there are not necessarily created or are not necessarily handled by them. So I think having the possibility to move data across, to be part of an open ecosystem, it's equally important. You see banks like Intesa Sanpaolo in Italy who are integrating TransferWise as a payment provider because they understand that they can't really force the customer just to use, you know, their own traditional mechanisms. And to them, the customer experience matters most. They want to be there to serve the customer, irrespective of the fact that the customer is using an external service that is being surfaced through their solution or using some of their services.
Thank you for that example. I suppose that takes us very neatly onto the third point that you made as a key theme for 2021, and that is digital transformation journeys reach a crossword. Of course, much of digital transformation is geared towards achieving the outcomes that we've discussed in the first two points around data and personalization, how that links to customer experience and designing service journeys around those types of value chains and customer journeys. So, Theo, I'd love to get your perspective on digital transformation journeys and the crossroads that we're at in 2021.
Look, we at FintechOS, we've always said it for the last 2 years, but it's becoming more and more real as we move on. The era of big transformation projects or programs is over. And the problems that you see, so I was discussing with one of our customers in the Benelux region, and you know, it's a tier one financial institution. And they were saying, do you know how much money, for example, we spent last year with a tier one consulting company in terms of digital strategy? So they said something around 10 million plus. Do you know how much money have we spent in prototyping and moving whatever we're prototyping into production in terms of that digital transformation? So they said a staggering around 300K. Right? Now, that's not an example. I mean, it is an example, but it's not a good example. And it's probably quite extreme. But I think the reality is that what you see in, you know, irrespective of, you know, the tier one, tier two, tier three financial institutions, everybody is struggling to cope with moving stuff out of the, you know, proof of concepts, proof of value into production, into live environments where you know, those type of innovation initiatives are really giving value to the end customer and therefore to the bank as well. And I think this is a topic where we fundamentally need to evolve as an industry, because agile doesn't mean agility at the end of the day. And I thoroughly respect the fact that a lot of these institutions are more than 100 years old. So therefore, it takes a lot of time to change mentality, to think more proactive, to think in terms of lean processes. But at the end of the day, what matters to the customer is time to value. And when I'm saying that, you know, the digital transformation journeys or programs reach a crossroad, well, that crossroad is pretty much linked with, you know, how long it takes for something to become effectively valuable for the end customer. And this is where things need to change. This is where having a, you know, an end-to-end digital transformation approach that is not only focused on tip of the iceberg, but also on core processes is important. This is where technologies like no-code, low-code, they play a part, because they can effectively, you know, accelerate this type of moving from, you know, several stages of innovation into real operations.
Absolutely. I think that's a neat way of tying all of these things together, Tio. So thank you for your top three predictions for you and for FinTech OS that will define technology transformation in 2021. I think that actually it's really interesting when we kind of compare your three with some of the thoughts that I've been having personally as to some of the trends that I'm interested in tracking in 2021. So as I mentioned, kind of no code or low code development, and you mentioned that as a bit of an accelerator. For me personally, you know, obviously there are a number of ways in which no code or low code has been used in things like website development. So if people aren't familiar with applications for no code or low code, it's basically how you can build things without actually writing the code yourself. So somebody else has built a tool which allows you to build things, and they've done all of the development work for you, and you can kind of move things around to get the outcome that you want. And we've seen that in website design as an example. But one of the really interesting areas I'm keen to track over 2021 is how that moves into the machine learning space. Obviously, there are many, many talented people who are in that space, data scientists, quants and others, who use machine learning models to derive insight. But, you know, for the last year and a bit, we've really seen people move into building platforms that allow people to really actually get benefit from machine learning without actually having to write much code themselves. And, you know, myself, I can code a bit, but certainly not at the level needed. And I'm not a data scientist. So, you know, over Christmas, I built a kind of a jokey app, which used some machine learning models to make recommendations about what somebody could afford, right, in a banking app. So, you know, as part of a jokey banking app, you know, if somebody said, oh, I want to buy some very, very expensive sports car, right, they could type into their app and say, could I afford this? And, you know, they'd use a little bit of machine learning to calculate whether your balance would allow you to do that. But, you know, that was only possible because of no code or low code development that different machine learning platforms have provided. So that's an interesting one for me. Linked to that and something to you that you'd mentioned a few times is bank as a service. We heard a little bit about this last year on a podcast series. We did an episode on how to build a bank in 20 days. And that was really driven through platforms and through APIs. But it means that actually you can plug and play a little bit in terms of the core services that you need to operate as a bank. So that's another thing. And I think, Tio, that chimes with the three that you've mentioned. And then last one, which is linked to technology, but is much broader, is I'd be very interested to see how ideas around central bank digital currencies emerge in 2021. We've had early thinking in lots of different countries, and we're planning an upcoming podcast on this topic to dig into that. So I think lots of research in that topic is ongoing to understand its potential and what it might look like. But those are my three things to track in this year as well. So Tio, I don't know if any of those will be of interest to you as well.
Absolutely. I think obviously there's not enough time to get into details here, but I think a combination of three things is going to really transform the industry or, you know, provide the means of accelerated transformation. I think no code, low code is important, although a lot of people are looking at it as a gimmick, right? But I think that the purpose of no code, low code is to glue things around and to provide people with more inclusive innovation capabilities, right? And then having the core technology infrastructure to properly digitize, you know, the middleware and the back end of a bank, it's also important in a manner that it's API driven, in a manner that is microservices driven. But and last but not least, you know, your data play, your data core is going to tell the world who, what type of a bank you'll be in the next, I don't know, 2-3 years, all right? So data, end-to-end digital infrastructure and no code, low code, it's the key. So I think we're pretty much aligned.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, it's going to be interesting at the end of the year, we can look back and see whether we were accurate or whether, like other people who said that e-commerce might not really ever take off, whether we will have to look back and laugh that we were quite off the mark. So I'd like to say thank you so much to you for sharing FinTech OS's insights onto these topics. I hope that it's been provocative to the audience, informative, and things that they can look out for in 2021. We've built a really good audience with this podcast series, and we're really keen to continue the conversation. We'd really welcome your feedback. We've had some great feedback from people raising perspectives on what we've discussed in the podcast. So I'd really invite the audience to please reach out to us at UK Finance if you have insights on what we've discussed or different perspectives. We'd really welcome you to contact us. Equally, if there are topics that the audience would like to dig into more, please do let us know. We want to make this useful to you as a group. So I look forward to hearing more from you in future. Thank you for joining us on this podcast, and I look forward to joining you on future podcasts. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the UK Finance Future of Finance podcast. For more information, please visit ukfinance.org.uk/podcasts.